don't discount the power of talking to those people, like your customers, having a way for them to tell you, having a way to take that feedback in and kick off an incident from it. That's a huge, huge aspect that I think sometimes gets overlooked in tech. Well, I've got my alerts in place, so I'm good. And then you walk away. Well, wait, did you put something in place for your people to reach out to you? How can they get a hold of you? How do they know when it's bad enough to get a hold of you? You know, those types of guidelines and guardrails that you need to put in place for your people can be extremely beneficial.
Welcome to the Better Incidents Podcast, where we hear from reliability-obsessed responders who are at the forefront of the movement to better manage, remediate, and learn from incidents. I'm your host, Robert Ross. Engineers have been managing incidents for about as long as they've been building software. But it's only in the past few years that incident management has become a primary focus for software teams. Today, I'm talking to Shannon Schultz, an engineering manager of incident response, about practical ways to implement incident management. Shannon, it's great to have you here. So why don't we get started? And, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you've been and how you got to where you are today as a great SRE leader?
Yeah. Well, Robert, thanks for having me. I'm excited to get to chat with you today about my favorite subject of incident response and all things incident management related. But gosh, I mean, where to even start? The beginning of my career, I started out in customer support and moved up into tech support to cloud engineer to cyber reliability and to just all the different flavors of more or less kind of the same thing when keeping production happy, healthy, and running. So about 20 years of experience in a variety of those roles. And 15 of those years have involved on-call life. So
wow,
responding to pages and...
You were literally holding a pager at one point then.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
So I love incidents and like responding to them because I think I've done this for so long. I'm a little bit wired to just respond to my phone as like, oh, what is it? You know, Now phones are fancier, so I could tell the difference. Like that's a page. I've got a special ringtone for that or tone for that. And versus, oh, that's a friend. Like,
yeah.
My favorite places though to escape are pages and cell phone service do not reach. Mm-hmm. So just to like be able to unplug for a bit.
Yeah. And how you do that? I think you're in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I'm in Minnesota, lived here my whole life. So I love to get out and away from incidents by going hiking and paddling and backpacking outdoors, usually with my dog. So that's how I unplug from the on-call and incident response life.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm the same way. I like to go camping or skiing or something that forces me to be a little analog for a while. That's great. Well, so I think that one thing that we were chatting about recently is, you know, like, talk to me about incident response and kind of where we are. I mean, and this question comes from you've seen a lot. You carried a literal pager. You've been keeping the computers happy for over 20 plus years. And ultimately, it means keeping customers happy. But this incident response thing kind of feels like it has a new life, right? Talk to me about where you think incident response is. Are we a newborn? Are we a toddler? Teenager, young adult, like where are we in this journey right now?
Yeah, so I'm going to give the classic answer of, gosh, it depends.
Say overall, the lines, senior engineer. Yeah.
Yeah, like overall, I think incident response is not necessarily new. It's been out there in a variety of different industries for a while. But in the tech realm or the software as a service realm, that feels newer to me. So, you know, we're in the newborn to toddler. We're just trying to get our legs underneath us and figure things out. It feels like we're still in the beginning. So I think it'll be a really exciting field to watch as it grows and changes and as it becomes more prevalent in the tech industry. Yeah, it'll be exciting to see like, hey, where are we going to be in 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now? And how will tech have
changed? What does that look like? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what does 20 years from now look like in incident response? Can you imagine what it looks like? Have fun with it. Like, what do you think it's going to be?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. Hard to predict the future, but it'll be really interesting to watch. Hopefully, we're all going to get a lot more sleep. We kind of have taken incident response from other industries, right? And the tech area is just kind of getting into it more broadly. And there are certainly companies in some stages where, hey, they have it and they're rocking and rolling with it. They've been doing it for many years. And then others that maybe don't even necessarily have that alarm system in place, that alerting system in place, and they're just getting started. So I hope in the future, in 5 to 10 years, that one tech industry is, it's just a standard thing that we all have. And then I'm curious to see and hope that the tech industry can turn around and contribute some things back to the larger like incident response community as a whole. Because I think, you know, everything just keeps evolving over time. And I hope that the tech industry can help contribute to that evolution for everybody else to benefit from.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really interesting point, right? Because I think when you look at incident response as it is today, it's still kind of borrowing all the concepts from so many other resources, and like from flight safety to FEMA incident response to the way that firefighters are dispatched. There's a lot of borrowed concepts from all those things. And I think what you just said is really interesting. Like, when is it going to go the other way? When is incident response going to go into flight safety as a concept? When are they going to learn from us? And I think it's a good way to think, like, maybe that's the curve, is like in 20 years, something will be borrowing the ideas from the incident response community. What do you think are the norms today for a really mature organization that will become like standardized? You hit on maybe one of them is people have alerts. Like, that's becoming standard, right? So like, what's another one that businesses are normalizing around?
Hopefully, the concept of just having incidents happen, like, you know, they're going to happen. Like, there should just be a norm throughout any tech industry, well, you know, any industry, but especially in tech, it seems like, oh, you can't fail. You gotta keep things up. I mean, that was kind of the norm, I feel like, a while ago, and you were aiming for perfection. But I mean, honestly, if anything, I hope the norm is that we know that incidents are going to happen, right? Because we are not perfect people producing perfect code on a perfect infrastructure in a perfect world that never has any changes. Like, that just doesn't exist. So hopefully you know that they're going to happen. Therefore, you know, you need a plan. In circles I'm in, that's kind of a known thing, but it's not necessarily in every software as a service industry that you should plan and prepare for that.
Yeah. Yeah. In many ways, it feels like, you know, being in that circle of the learning from incidents community or, you know, really, really embracing the SRE philosophy, that is a pretty small community compared to the broader, just like software community out there. It's confirmation bias at work, right? When you hang out with people that all care so deeply about incidents, learning from them, getting better, improving systems, human safety factors, like, you must think that everyone thinks that way, but it's just not the case, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, whenever I'm like, you know, listen to some SRE talk or DevOps event or learning from incidents or just any of those communities that are talking about this thing, it feels like, yeah, and more it feels like we're all on the same page. And then we go back to our own individual communities and I sometimes feel like I'm on an island, or, okay, how do we get everyone together and help manage, control the chaos, so to speak, and help bring everybody on board with the concepts that those of us who specialize in this, who are focused on this, are all sharing, but bringing that back home, like that could be a harder thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully, I mean, just in general, it gets more normalized over time.
So how does this get normalized, right? You've implemented incident response at a couple of companies now. What is the bare minimum plan nowadays for a technology team? Like, what should they be building for? What's the psyche that they should have when they're first developing an incident response team and plan?
So two things come to my mind. I love the firefighting analogy, but you know, you're building a building, you put in the fire alarms, right? You're building a product or a system or software as a service, you need to have some kind of alerting system. that tells you when something goes wrong. And whether you even know all the ways in which something can go wrong or not, just start with some kind of basic alerting system. So I would recommend starting with that, and then know that you're always going to be tweaking it and adjusting it, dialing it up or dialing it down, or finding, oh, we need an alert over here. We didn't even consider that to begin with. That's just part of the like growth process, I think, in general. But beyond an alerting system, the other one I think that often gets overlooked, at least in the tech realm, is the people aspects. Like, you know, a fire, you either got an alarm or people are going to call 911. They're going to call someone. They're going to yell or scream or report it in some way. And I guess in the business sense, you've got two different groups of people. Your customers, those that you provide that product or service to, they're going to probably tell you when something isn't working or going wrong. And then the other way is your own company employees, right? Like those are your two main groups of people. And so the alarm part, that's easy. I mean, it's easy to a degree to like, yeah, okay, I'm a tech person. I got to build this. I got to put that in. But your people are actually a huge, huge resource too, because they're going to tell you when things don't work. So don't discount the power of talking to those people, like your customers, having a way for them to tell you, having a way to take that feedback in and kick off an incident from it. That's a huge, huge aspect that I think sometimes gets overlooked in tech. Well, I've got my alerts in place, so I'm good. And then you walk away. Well, wait, did you put something in place for your people to reach out to you? How can they get a hold of you? How do they know when it's bad enough to get a hold of you? You know, those types of guidelines and guardrails that you need to put in place for your people can be extremely beneficial.
I like the analogy, because the analogy is that fires are going to happen, right? We don't install smoke detectors because fires don't happen. We install them because they do. Like, we build sprinkler systems, but still have fire departments, right?
Yeah. That's,
so talk to me a bit more about, once these alarms are in place, what's the next step? How does someone go from having an alarm to having incident response?
I think there are two things, and I'll talk about each of them. Listen to your people, and I'll circle back to that. And then the other one is learn the basics about good incident response foundations and why. So there's lots of resources out there. Fire Hydrant, you guys have some. PagerDuty, Atlassian, there's a lot of different documentation and books out there that lay out a basic foundation of what good incident response would look like. And you might go and find that and read it and get overwhelmed because, oh my gosh, you need an incident commander, you need a deputy, you need a scribe, what about a communications manager? All these different roles. And then you got to do this and that. And, you know, it can branch off into
a simple
incident to complex incident to, so I think it's worth learning about, but don't get overwhelmed or try to like implement all of it at once. Just know that it exists in different ways for you to go about solving your problems. And this is where I want to circle back to the first thing I said, which is listen to your people. I initially had thought to myself like, oh, talk to people, right? Like you should talk to your people. But I think it's more important you listen to your people. And by that, I mean, listen to everyone, the customer support folks, your engineers, leadership, your business partners, your customers, because if you're trying to go from nothing to something in the incident response realm, it's going to be overwhelming if you try to implement everything at once. Like, oh, here's the gold star. Mm-hmm. Here's the gold standard. You should go have all of this. Well, if you're smaller, you're not necessarily going to be able to go from zero to 60. You know, you have to take little steps. So what is your biggest pain point? When you listen to everyone, find out, hey, what do they like? What's working for them? What isn't working for them? What do they wish they had? Because they'll tell you, like people love to tell you what their biggest pain points are, and they'll tell you what they really love too. And then the parts that they're confused about, well, that might be an opportunity for education on, hey, here's what we do already have in place, but they didn't know about it.
What's a question that you would pose to someone, like when we're talking to our people and we're trying to figure out like the biggest pain that our people have? What's like a simple question that we can ask just to get that process going?
I tend to leave it open as like, hey, if we're doing incident response, what is it that you need? What are you looking for when things go wrong? that might be like a basic open-ended question that you might be able to ask to get some conversation going.
I like that, right? Because if I go back to the days as a on-call engineer, the people that felt the most pain from the incidents were beyond the customers, right? They're always going to feel the most pain. The second pain that's felt the most is customer service and success and like technical support. Like all of those teams feel pain, right? Because the customers are reaching out to them. And it's a good question to ask, like, what do you want to see when an incident happens, right? And maybe they just want deep communication. Maybe they want faster resolution. Maybe they just want better errors for the customers. It's not actually a problem for them. They just don't get good errors. Like, it's a good question to ask, I would say.
Yeah, I can think of an example where I'm in the role of an engineer and I'm on call, but I was trying to start incident response and get better at it. So I was like posting communications in the Slack channel and having that get duplicated over to a special leadership channel that was just for them. And I was doing the whole thing in like engineer speak.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was all in tech talk, and the feedback that I got from leadership was, we don't know what you mean. What's wrong? You know, like they didn't think of it in terms of like this application service or that database or this network thing. Like they just wanted to know at a high level what product was not working, who was this affecting? Like they just wanted those basics. And it took me so long, I think, to understand, oh, they have no idea what I'm talking about. I need to meet them where they're at. What do they need?
Right. So you were sending like low level applications data and they just want to know like people can't log in.
Yeah. And, like they had no idea what I was talking about. But I thought I'm doing a great job because I'm doing this communication with the other engineers in the channel who are also responding to it. And so it made sense to them, made sense to me. That was the playing field I was on. But leadership and customer support were like, you know, when I asked them, what do you need out of incident response? They're like, we don't know what you're talking about. We don't know what's wrong. Oh, like that light bulb was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And wow, I totally missed the boat on that one.
One of the hardest things I think about incident response is that translation, because you have to do it so rapidly. You have to go from technical problem to non-technical explanation very, very fast. Usually you have plenty of time in a non-incident world to make a slide deck that explains, you know, why we need to implement technology X because of the value of Y. But in an incident, people want to know in the first 5 minutes what the customer impact is. And you might just have a very simple technical error in a log somewhere. So we're talking about like incident response, where we are. We're like a toddler right now. When the bare minimum for incident response is just kind of knowing that they're happening, right? Having that alerting system. And once those fire alarms in place, like what's next? We ask people what they want to know when something is broken. And that's a good stepping stone for implementing incident response. But now comes the part that most teams are going to say, well, I already have some incident response. I have an on-call rotation. And I have engineers that have been here for 10 years that have been responding to pages. How do you introduce a incident response plan to that team? How do you introduce something that is such a potentially foreign and new concept to people that already have a process?
Yeah, that's hard because old habits are hard to change, or even like new habits are hard to form. And engineers can be really good at the technology aspect, right? But having someone who can quickly translate the engineer speak into customer speak, that's almost an acquired skill. When you ask engineers to try and do that, that could be like introducing a whole new responsibility.
You're almost implementing incident response in the beginning, not for the engineers in some cases. It's actually maybe for someone else.
Yeah. I have seen that in my career where it was like, ah, this was a system that was built by engineers for engineers and it left everyone else out. And so now we need to expand it a little bit. So how do we go about doing that? I think it's just take that next easiest step. Maybe it is finding a product owner who can hop on during an incident and just do that tech to product translation piece of it for the rest of the organization.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, hey, we're going to have an internal status page and spin something like that up. Or here's where you go to find out all of the things that are customer facing versus non-customer facing incidents. Hopefully your people have shared, like if you've listened to them across the organization, they will have told you what they're missing, what they need. And you can just begin to try something. I think you try to go big and change the whole thing, you're more likely to not get that buy-in. Whereas if you say, hey, we want to do this and here's why, and here's what we think might be the next easiest way to move in that direction, you'll get more buy-in and probably be more successful in the long run if you go for those little changes, those little incremental changes.
The cynic in me almost wants to just not even call it incident response at first. It's like, we're introducing, hey, this product person's just going to join the call so they can write status updates. and then there's another person creating action items on the call. And then all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, right? Because I think that what makes processes fail almost from the start is with no buy-in, right? If you don't have the buy-in, trying to force a square into a circle is not going to go well for that team. What does a successful incident response process even look like? What's a number that an executive can look at and go, oh, that's successful? Can you even do that?
Well, the dreaded question, what's the key performance indicator?
Yeah, give me a number. Tell me it's good or bad.
Yeah, I have been asked that a lot, especially over the last few years. And I've spent some time looking at numbers trying to produce that exact thing. And I'm coming to the conclusion, I guess, that the measurement isn't a number. Like there is no magic number that's going to tell you how stable your system is. I just don't see it being a number. If your listeners take anything away from this discussion, I hope it's listen to your people. Listen to your people because they're going to tell you how they feel about it overall. They're going to tell you if they feel like it's successful, if it was clear, if they were able to follow it. I think it's like the overall feeling of your customers, your employees, your business partners. Do they feel like you're doing a good job when you have an incident?
It's all about trust, right, at the end of the day. And I think that these reliable systems is far more a feeling that people have about your software because customers don't have KPIs about their trust to your product, right? Their KPI is like dollars spent. That's the number. But they spend the dollars because they trust your system. And on the inside, I think that's true as well. Like I've seen companies run retro polls. Like, how did this retro go? Did we feel good about this incident? Like sturdy software is not one measurement. It's the collective feeling of people. I mean, if we were to like measure how good incident response is, like we can't measure like the serotonin that people have in their systems to see how they're doing during an incident. I would imagine that employees would probably vote against that.
This makes me think of a story about numbers to share with you. I was doing the monthly reporting and giving the, you know, hey, are we at 99.999 uptime percentage for this month? And came across a product that was like at 50%. And I went, whoa, how do we have any? I don't remember any incidents for this. Let me go and look. And I don't remember customer complaints for this. What is going on? And went and found that just overnight, the product was going down for like under 2 minutes. It would go down and then it would come back up, but right under the 2 minute mark. So it didn't trigger the alarm. But the overall percentage of uptime was significantly reduced because every night it was going down. But the thing is, customers weren't using it overnight. And I forget the actual problem that went along with that one, but customers weren't using it overnight. And no incident response was really needed. And nobody needed to wake up to deal with it if customers didn't use it overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's an example to our customers. We were very stable. Number-wise, nope. We were looking not good. And engineer-wise, engineers were fine because they didn't have to wake up. So adjustments were made, that problem got solved, you know, no incidents came out of it, but just an example of, hey, there was a number, but it didn't actually, you know, impact anyone in at the end of the day or at the end of that month.
Yeah. I love that story. Like, it was down, but nobody actually cared.
Yeah.
Like, the government turns off servers and in their on the weekends in some departments. It was like trying to renew a license or something, and like,
yeah,
the servers turn off at 11 p.m. on Friday night, I think was what it was. Like, how is that even possible? But it's a good thing to remember, is like, if your customers are happy, the Charity Majors quote, I think I've said it 2 or 3 times on this podcast alone, like, it doesn't really matter. If the customers are happy, your numbers aren't what matter. Your reliability is determined largely by your customers. Full stop.
Yeah.
If they don't like your product and they feel like it's not sturdy, but you show them a dashboard that shows your uptime, they'd be like, I don't care.
And I would add to that, are your employees happy too? Like, I mean, if your employees are killing themselves, your engineers are like spending that entire night up, keeping it alive for customers who are like happy, but your engineers are like spent. You know, that's another thing that's another piece to look at too. But I mean, I totally agree. Like, if your customers and your employees are doing well and they're happy, then, you know, that number might not matter as much as you think it does. So,
yeah. So you got to find the other parts of incident response that matter.
Numbers are good. They tell us things, but it's just one piece of the overall puzzle. I think there's so many other pieces that can tell us more.
Are the people happy? That's all that matters. Well, with that, we learned a lot. We learned about where are we in incident response. We're a newborn right now when it comes to software incident response. Bare minimum, it's, you know, make sure you just have alarms to start with. Alarms that matter, right? And the people. And I love this part. You said that people are alarms. And I think that's so true. You can't put an alarm everywhere. And once those alarms go off, I mean, it's what's the next step? It's making sure that you listen to the people that are responding to that alarm. Are they getting what they need out of that process? And then introducing that plan is also the next hardest part. Like, how do you get people there? And, you know, we talked about just do the simplest thing possible. And I love this last piece. Like, how do you measure the success of the incident response? I think the core theme for you, Shannon, is definitely listen to the people.
Yeah, for sure. They'll tell you. So don't overlook that step in your incident response process.
Awesome. Well, Shannon, thanks so much for coming on, teaching us a few things about implementing incident response, measuring it, and just making happier people in your organization.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
The Better Incidents podcast is lovingly nurtured by the team at FireHydrant and made possible with generous contributions from the Better Incidents Collective. Learn more at betterincidents.com.